Welcome to another sparkling edition of Plank of the Week, right here in Talk Radio TV Towers. We are here and we are ready and we've got lots of planks to talk about. I'm with Kevin O'Sullivan, a veteran of this very show, and Emma Webb, of course, who's been here many times as well. We've got so much to do, I think we should get on with it right now. Kevin, why don't you kick us off with your first plank of the week?
I'm going to go for the Director General, the former Director General of the BBC, Tony Hall, who at this moment, while we're recording Plank, is in Parliament giving his testimony to a committee of MPs about the appalling Martin Bashir saga, for which Tony Hall continues to make ludicrous excuses. This saga has become a massive embarrassment to the BBC, and they've just announced that they've marked their own homework generously by holding an internal inquiry.
Yes.
And they've cleared themselves, surprise, surprise,
well,
in any way rehiring Martin Bashir in 2016 in order to cover up the Diana scandal. Now, the thing is, that's typical of the BBC. It's answering a question that nobody asked. Mm. Nobody suggested that you rehired Bashir in 2016, 21 years after that interview, to cover it up.
Right.
I mean, he had plenty of time to do it in between, if you see what I mean. So,
but also, they'd already admitted that he did all the things that he's accused of
exactly
doing.
Exactly right, so exactly right.
It's not much of a cover-up.
So they've tried to come up with, look, we've investigated, and we're in the clear. Well, no, you're not. And Tony Hall, basically, when they rehired Bashir, which is the real problem they've got right now. So they knew back in 1995, they knew what he did, particularly Tony Hall, who was head of news.
Yeah.
He went on to become director general. So when Bashir was bafflingly rehired in 2016 as religious editor of all things.
What a great idea that was. What job should we give him?
Oh, God, that's a mistake.
Was it not also ethics correspondent? Yeah.
Apparently they hired him just because he knew some stuff about St. Paul.
Ah, there you go.
Yeah. So the big question is, why did you rehire him? You knew the nefarious techniques he used to ensnare Diana into that interview, and 21 years later you rehire him, even though you knew that he faked those documents, you knew he used underhand psychological techniques, you knew everything that he did. Tony Hall knew this. Their story is, oh well, the news department rehired him and the director general didn't really know about it. Rubbish. Absolute rubbish.
Isn't there some story doing the rounds that he actually recommended him, and when he was asked effectively for a sort of verbal reference, that he said he was a very reliable man?
Well, that was his original...
His original
investigation back in 1996 when these allegations first arose, which found Bashir guilty of forging documents. He's an honest and decent man, and he's going to be forgiven because we believe in giving people a second chance, and he feels very bad about it, so he's going to stay here. So the thing is, there's no way that somebody like Martin Bashir could have been rehired in 2016 without the Director General, Tony Hall, knowing. There's no way whatsoever. So,
well, you think somebody would have come to him and said, you remember that guy that did all the forging of those, remember that big panorama thing? He was quite a big story.
Yeah.
So we're thinking of rehiring him. What do you think?
Look, Mike, this guy conducted the most iconic interview in television history, now, of course, much tainted. But at the time, it was the most explosive scoop, exclusive, that anyone had ever seen. Mm. It won the BBC BAFTAs, it won Bashir BAFTAs. And so the idea that this guy, after 20 years in America, was coming back to his spiritual home, and the Director General wouldn't know about it, is absolute nonsense.
Yeah.
And there is Tony Hall sitting there, still making excuses for this. The BBC marking its own homework generously, exonerating itself. When is this organisation going to face the facts and admit that this was the most amazing screw-up of all time, and that Bashir should never have been rehired? It needs to come out and say, I'm sorry, right from the start.
Yeah.
This has been one long procession of cock-ups, and we humbly apologise for our abysmal mistakes. And while I'm on the racket, Tony Hall was the worst Director General in the history of the BBC, and that's saying something.
And he's now quit his job running some gallery, right?
Well, he went to the National Gallery, and he had to step down because of the disgrace of the Bashir affair. Tony Hall made the amazing job of taking over the BBC when it was at its lowest point amid the Jimmy Savile scandal, because his predecessor, George Entwistle, had been Director General for about 10 minutes and he had to resign because he tried to cover up Jimmy Savile.
It's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's amazing that all these things. I mean, if there was any other media organisation, they'd be out of business by now.
Tony Hall,
there doesn't seem to be a bottom to the well.
No, exactly. So Tony Hall is brought in at this very low moment and then, absolutely no mean feat, you know, years later, steps down with the BBC in a worse state than when he took over. The man is a total disaster. Goes on to the National Gallery, has to quit because of the scandal of the BBC. Tony Hall, Blank of the Week every week.
You may have won it already. I'm surprised, actually, he didn't make it on last week. But he wasn't on it last week, funnily enough.
Yeah.
What do you got for us, Emma, for your first one?
Boris Johnson.
Yeah, of course.
So I could have nominated him for extending Freedom Day by 4 weeks.
Yeah,
it's a good enough reason, yeah.
But actually, the reason why he's in here is because of something that he said at the G7 summit. When he was spewing out all of these garbled platitudes that sounded like they were coming from his mouth but not from his brain, about building back freer and more equal.
Fairer.
And then he said gender neutral and more feminine.
Yes.
Both gender neutral and more feminine.
I mean, you can't be both of those things, can you?
And what does it mean anyway?
He seems confused.
Building back more gender neutral.
Well, I did say to someone.
But it sounded as if he was like this sort of automaton that had just been plugged into somebody else's.
Well, has,
was,
you know,
and the
is,
connection was a bit shaky.
Is Carrie kind of operating in now, you know, like a ventriloquist dummy. Just make sure you say, you know what she said to him? She probably said, look, make sure, Boris, that you mention gender neutral and feminine when you make the speech. She wasn't expecting to put it in the same sentence.
Yeah.
You know, she thought maybe two separate sentences, you know. But yeah, I don't know what he was playing at. I don't know what audience he thought he was playing to. But I was saying this today, that he's in his element when he's at that kind of thing, isn't he?
He's done interviews before where he talks about, you know, very intelligently about the use of language and so on. Mm. So he should know very well that spewing out these discombobulated buzzwords that make no sense joined together like this makes him sound like he doesn't
salad,
know what he's talking
it's
about.
Just literally, you know, mix it all up.
Yeah, something in there
neutral.
For everyone.
Yeah, feminine.
Feminine.
Let's be more feminine. Feminist, you know, whatever. It's very bizarre, isn't it? But he should also be, I mean, nominated definitely for this nonsense that he's doing this week in particular, where, you know, let's not forget, they told people who had to come back early from their holidays in Portugal that was to save June the 21st.
Yeah.
That was the reason. They said we need to ensure that the domestic, you know, unlocking happens.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's not happening. So I have no faith whatsoever.
On what grounds will they ever think that it's justified to lift lockdown?
Most people are past caring.
Well, you know,
they really are.
They actually
are.
The last, and I'm going to move on to mine now because it sort of sashays through into it. Chris Whitty, he's literally a guy who doesn't see any good in anything. You know, I said to somebody the other day, he was just sitting on a train journey with this guy. He would just be literally sitting there whispering in your ear. That looks a bit dangerous.
But their narrative is finished. Their narrative is finished. It is purely to terrify us by saying hundreds will die every day. And we are now at the point, so be it. Just give us our lives
but
back.
But actually, more attention should be paid to these modellers as well, because the modellers that he uses have got it wrong again.
Yeah,
they've been saying that there should be 7,000 people currently in hospital. There's only 1,000, right? So it's a factor of seven fewer than they said it would be, right? But what really puts him in the plank list for me today is not that press conference, although that was bad enough, but it was what was in the Telegraph today, which was his assertion that he now believes that children should be vaccinated. And the only way to save the world and to save the planet and to save us from going into yet another lockdown is for kids to get vaccinated. I think that's really insidious. I think it's dangerous. Mm-hmm. I think it's wrong. And I think it's not for government officials of any kind to start telling me or any other parent what you're going to do with your children.
And it shows what they're actually chasing. They are chasing the mythical nirvana of zero COVID, aren't they?
There's something obscene about those. Sadiq Khan did the same thing today where he said we have to have all of the young people vaccinated, otherwise we can't fully open up London.
But it's coerced.
They say, it's mandatory. It's not a mandatory vaccination, but we are going to coerce you with the threat of depriving you of your civil liberties if you don't do what we tell you to do.
And this is entirely their political decision. It's nothing to do with medicine, nothing to do with health, it's nothing to do with public health. It is everything to do with them saying, oh, we can only do this if you agree to that. And that's nonsense, absolute rubbish, you know. And I think it, because people have been quite sort of willing to go along with things, and because they've been quite willing to do what they've been asked to do, I think we have reached a point, as Kevin said, that people are just going to start to say, no, we're not doing that.
Yeah.
And I don't think, if we don't start saying no, you know, you never know where this is going to end, you know?
Yeah,
what are you going to do next? You're going to say, right, okay, you've had your children vaccinated, you know, now you're going to get another vaccination next year in order to get a booster, or, you know, we still don't really know for sure whether there might be another variant coming, or there might be another, you know, disease coming that you're going to have to be vaccinated against, or else, you know, they're creating a sort of a narrative here where we have lost total control of our own lives.
Yeah.
It's so unhealthy. It's almost like a kind of, you can imagine somebody who is, you know, has some kind of, or almost is psychologically disturbed, being so obsessed with zero COVID. Every single person in the world must be vaccinated. Mm. Well, you can't vaccinate every single person in the world without undermining bodily autonomy. People should have a choice whether or not they want to be vaccinated.
Well, also, it's a ridiculous idea. I mean, you just simply cannot do it. I mean, if you're going to go to places like China, you're going to go to places like India, you know, you don't even know how many people live in India. How are you going to vaccinate everybody? You have no idea how to do that. And it's all just more kind of, you know, virtue signalling and posturing and trying to look good.
These guys, I mean, it's definitely some of them, they enjoy playing pandemic because it puts them in a position of power.
Yeah.
It gets them on the telly. People are listening to them. I think millions and millions of people in this country, we're sick of playing pandemic. Mm. We want to get back to normal.
Exactly. That's certainly how it seems when you see
I mean,
Matt
I think,
Hancock
I don't know about you guys, but I think next Monday is going to be very interesting indeed, because people are going to be like they were yesterday, out on the streets, probably demonstrating.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, I worry that it could turn pretty nasty and pretty ugly, because, you know, there are two groups of people in this country now. The ones who think, never mind, we're just going to do what we want. And the ones who want to stop them doing what they want.
Boris is going to have a big compliance problem.
Yeah.
Well, the news last week that 80% of adults in England have antibodies, and that includes people under 35 who are not vaccinated.
Right.
You know, even people who have been compliant and have been pro all of the different public health policies will see that and think, hang on a minute, this doesn't make any sense, because people have invested huge amounts of money in getting their businesses ready to open on June the 21st. Those are, you know, all places like nightclubs, theatres, that will literally go bust because they've invested all their money in being ready for that one deadline just for the goalpost to be shifted again. I think that is what will turn public opinion. Yeah. I don't think people will
because
put up with this
because there's only so many times you can tell people, oh, it's going to be all right in a couple of weeks. I mean, they've been doing it now for, what, nearly 18 months. I just don't think they're going to get away
with
it anymore. It's awful. Kevin, who's your next one?
I'm going to go for the England, the woke England football manager, Gareth Southgate, whose addiction to footballers grovelling to Black Lives Matter is inexplicable.
Yeah.
You know, I have no problem with footballers if they really want to make gestures in support of opposing racism. We all oppose racism. If they want to do something, if they must, if they think that's going to make the world a better place or in any way affect the problem of racism, by all means, go ahead. Take a knee, whatever you want to do, but do not affiliate it to Black Lives Matter. Black Lives Matter, as is always being said, is an extremist political organisation that stands for smashing capitalism, destroying the nuclear family, and defunding the police. That's what...
He's trying to make out that's not what it is, though, isn't it?
But it is. It is, as I say, by all means, if you must virtue signal about your opposition to racism, do so. But not to Black Lives Matter. What we are seeing is professional footballers grovelling on their knees to a ludicrous political organisation from America. Why are they doing it? And why doesn't Gareth Southgate, who's supposed to be the intelligent man of football, one of football's thinkers, why doesn't he understand that? I mean, usually if you're very intelligent in football, it means you nearly pass your 11 plus and that's about it. And Gareth Southgate's no exception. I think that...
Sticking two fingers up to the fans as well.
Yeah,
which is,
it tells
you, know,
you
it was
exactly.
Only, when was it we were arguing about the Super League, right? Mm. And everyone was being told, oh, but the fans are important. The fans make the game. You know, you can't betray the fans.
Yeah. Yeah.
And UEFA, of course, who have now decided to step in and fine the countries that wanted to, or the clubs that wanted to join that, 20 million quid so they get more money in. But, you know, the fans apparently don't matter in the Europe.
And it shows you exactly what they think of those fans as well, because they're willing to extend the latitude to the players and say, oh, they're taking the knee, but it's to do with racism, it's not to do with Black Lives Matter.
Yeah.
But they're not willing to extend the same latitude to the to the fans, exactly. Who they think, oh, well, they're booing, so they must just be these racist.
They must be racist.
That's exactly right. That, if you like, and I think the players are most, the vast majority of the players are doing it just because they're told to do it. Because, you know, as I always say, you know, in the end, this is to support George Floyd in Minneapolis. Those footballers couldn't point to Minneapolis.
Well, I mean, to be fair to them, though, they have tried to explain that that's not what they're doing it for. Because they've moved it again, the goalposts being moved all the time. They started off by saying it was about recognition of the fact that there's racial injustice. Now it's about all injustice, apparently. Yeah. So it's not just about racial injustice, it's about the injustice that goes on in the world. Well, I'm sorry, I don't care whether footballers think there's injustice going on in the world. You know, they've all got Bentleys.
They don't care.
Of course there's injustice. They all have to do.
And if you want to make a statement, do what Wilfred Zaha suggested and stand up or do something like linking arms.
I mean, I was very disappointed with Scotland, because this time last week, do you remember Scotland had said that they were going to stand up against racism? They then got leaned on, presumably by the political masters of the FA and the Scottish FA and possibly the government. And then they came out and said, well, we're going to stand against racism for the games in Scotland, but when they come to England, when they play England, they're going to stand in solidarity with England.
Yeah, well, we won't have to worry too much about Scotland's gestures for very long, will we? I was going to nominate
the Scottish goalkeeper.
I was going to nominate David Marshall.
But famously, apart from like one decent Scottish goalkeeper, they haven't really had great history of goalkeepers.
Yes, but a good idea if you're the goalkeeper is stand between the posts. Don't go and stand in the centre circle. So David Marshall could have been a plank of the week, but I feel kind of sorry for him not having a very good Euros. The other thing I wanted to mention about the players taking the knee and Gareth Southgate's blind support of it, which is massively divisive, and when the fans boo, that is an expression of their freedom of expression.
Yes,
they have it's a freedom of speech issue, so they must not be condemned. They have every right to boo that gesture if they want. And the other I wanted to say about it, which isn't really Gareth Southgate's fault, but I noticed
that, you know, we've got this new kind of world in which we live. You're not supposed to be disrespectful to anyone, right? Mm-hmm. Were they not booing the Croatian players when they got the ball? Because I thought that's what I could hear. And that quite often happens. But isn't that being disrespectful to the Croatian players?
Who cares?
I don't care. But if you're going to you're gonna be sanctimonious about people booing,
well, I suppose that's
surely you should say don't boo the opposition.
You always boo the opposition when they get the ball.
But that's my point, Kevin.
My
point. People boo all the time.
That's a sporting issue.
You can't tell. No, but the point is you can't tell the fans not to boo.
Yeah, of course you can't.
If you let them boo.
Interestingly, they also allowed... He didn't say anything about the fans who cheered after some of the other fans booed.
Yeah.
So he said that he was happy to allow the footballers to make the decision if they wanted to take the knee or stand up or whatever gesture they wanted to make, but didn't complain that, you know, it's not that the fans are just not allowed to make a sound. They're only allowed to cheer, they're not allowed to boo.
Exactly.
If you're going to allow the players to take the knee or to make any kind of gesture that they wanted to have their freedom of expression, you have to allow the fans to be able to express themselves if they want to cheer or if they want to boo.
And the last thing to say about this, again, this isn't quite Gareth Southgate's fault, but I blame him for persisting with this ludicrous ritual which has been so divisive and cast a shadow over the Euros. He should have just said, all right, we won't do it, or we'll do it to kick it out. We'll do it to kick it out, not to Black Lives Matter. It's quite easy to get out of, but he hasn't got the intellectual capacity to do it. But when that moment unfolded, the thing that everybody had been talking about all week, the big story, England would take the knee, would the fans boo? England took the knee for about 3 nanoseconds and stood
straight. It was very quick.
I
thought it was quicker than normal.
They did it really quickly. Yeah. They were obviously told, get rid of that.
It was a genuflection, wasn't it? It wasn't, you know.
And then
I remember those days.
And then the fans booed. And this iconic moment that people have been took, this big news story, yes, they did take the knee, yes, they did boo. BBC commentary team did not say a damn word. They didn't notice, or they didn't note.
Oh, they noticed.
They noticed, but they didn't note that this huge story was unfolding. They just let it happen. That is news censorship by our state broadcaster. Mm-hmm. Absolutely outrageous.
Well, the BBC may get another mention later on. Emma, who's your second one?
Stalin's nanny, Susan Mitchie.
Either way, I don't care if you mispronounce it.
Mitchie the lefty.
So she is a member of Sage who went on Channel 5, and when asked how long she thought that the measures should go on, lockdown measures, wearing a mask and surface hygiene and things like that. She said, forever. And she said...
I mean, we're laughing, but I mean, these are the people running the country.
Yeah, well, yeah. She had a sort of smirk on her face where she knew that at that exact moment that she was showing all of her cards. And she used to be referred to, apparently, when she was at Oxford University, she used to be referred to as Stalin's nanny.
Did she?
Her brother, apparently, was a really close friend of Seamus Milne.
Okay.
Gets worse.
So, and she's a long-term member of the Communist Party. So hardly surprising that she has such a heavy-handed approach to public health.
And she's also a behavioural scientist, isn't she?
Which is very sinister.
She's a psychiatrist.
Yeah, but I think she's behavioural.
No, she's not. She's a psychiatrist. That's all she is.
Okay.
These people aren't even qualified to be on stage.
Well, they're not qualified to do anything other than advise the government about what people are likely to think and what they're likely to do. Well, how does she know?
What was really interesting was that she said that she didn't think that it wouldn't be a big deal for us to change our behaviour in these little ways. Like, as you check your pocket for your keys and your phone before you leave, that you'll check if you've got your mask there as well. She said she compared it to wearing seatbelts and picking up dog poo in the park.
Yeah.
She said that it would help with other diseases as well, but then she said the next thing around the corner is environmental disaster.
Yep.
So we're going in the direction of climate change as we predicted.
But this is my point. You know, this is why we have to make sure that we put some kind of stopper into the dam, because otherwise these people won't give up. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They'll be trying
to do...
They'll have had so much success with this that they will think they can do anything they want.
So put the case that this lifelong devoted member of the Communist Party is proposing plans that would destabilise capitalist Britain. Mm. What on earth is a staunch communist doing on this important government advisory board? It's an outrage.
I know, it really is. And I mean, I'd love to know what she was doing before this particular incarnation on stage, because I don't really know. I'm assuming she was just some sort of, you know, slightly foggy academic who was occasionally asked to write something for a newspaper or come up with some kind of study or do some kind of paper for a psychiatric conference or something. But I wonder what she's been doing for her entire career to give her the right to be sitting on this committee telling us all how to live.
It's interesting as well, if you remember when Neil Ferguson said that they hadn't thought that the people of this country would behave in as a compliant way as people in Asian countries,
and they were surprised,
and they were pleasantly surprised that once they dipped their toe in and tested the waters that we were all so compliant.
And he's the guy who literally has got nothing right in his entire career. Yeah. Every single prediction he's made hasn't come true.
He's pretty good between the sheets.
Well, according to his German lover, but I don't know whether that's still going on.
But Boris Johnson said that
he's good enough to get on the Radio 4 Today programme about once a week. They always get him on.
I know. Boris Johnson said that about. He said that. He'd learnt that the British people were surprisingly easy. It was surprisingly easy to take freedom away from the British people, much more easy than he'd thought. But it's very difficult to give it back to them.
Well, he doesn't want to give it back. Clearly.
Well, he's not giving them back.
You know, brings me to the G7, because you mentioned it earlier on when we were talking about Boris Johnson. All of these people that struck me when I was watching them at the weekend, you know, from Macron to von der Leyen to Joe Biden, they're all paid by us, right? Every single one of them. We bankroll everything that they do. You know, their salaries are paid by us. Air Force One is paid for by the American taxpayer. You know, every single taxpayer in the world was paying for that jolly down in Carbis Bay, which turns out to be some kind of childhood holiday destination that
Stanley
used to go to, or Stanley used to go to. I mean,
take the kids,
it's all a bit kind of twee, you know? And I just thought to myself, watching them, all cavorting around with one another without a care in the world. They clearly, as I said, were not concerned about getting COVID. They weren't concerned about spreading COVID. They were concerned about looking like they're all having a fabulous time.
The proles
time.
In the background with their masks
yeah,
on.
Yeah, I mean, all the other people
yeah, They didn't have masks on.
Yeah, but they didn't have masks
only,
on.
Only the people
they,
who were serving
you know, they have a barbecue.
They're shaking hands,
they
hugging.
They were hugging, arms around each other.
See how close Macron and Biden were almost embracing.
Yeah.
Well, they did, yeah. They did.
But, you know, it just I found it quite sickening watching them all, really. And I don't really know what the G7... is for, and on this particular occasion, this meeting, I don't think anything actually came out of it at all.
Yeah.
I don't remember
the Queen reminds Biden of his mother. That was the main thing that seems to have come out.
So the Queen's 193 years old, for God's sake.
Well, I said to somebody the other day, you know, the Queen's the oldest person Biden's met.
Yeah.
He's never met anybody older than himself. Well,
the Queen was thrilled to meet someone younger than
her. Absolutely right. But, you know, I just find it sort of, you know, the kind of like, it's not, you know, I'm all for laughing and joking, I'm all for having fun, but this is not really the time, you know?
It's a bad look.
They've all flown in on private jets to tell us about saving the climate, one.
Yeah.
Two, they go out and they go to the Eden Project and all pretend to care about the environment when, you know, everybody knows America is probably the biggest polluter in the entire world. It ain't going to change anytime soon. I mean, I did Joe Biden.
I think it's the third biggest.
He thinks that, you know, Americans are going to give up their cars. Really? I mean, Kevin and I both lived there. They ain't giving up their cars. You know, any sooner they're giving up their...
Petrol and beer. Never touch that in America.
You know, they're not going to give up their guns either. You know, they're not going to change just because Joe Biden thinks they should. And, you know, I just don't understand. I mean, they didn't even really come out with much of a declaration on all
but
of that.
Look at them. Look at them. They all, particularly Joe Biden, who flew from London to Cornwall and then back from Cornwall to London to meet the Queen on that massive great Air Force One while lecturing us about climate change.
Someone needs to do a calculation on that.
Go shove it, you old hypocrite.
I know, exactly. But also, how much money did it cost? I know there's 6,000 police down there, right, who were all living on a cruise ship, which was parked off to the coast. Normally, they have 20 in Carbis Bay. Mm. 6,000 police.
Great for the ocean.
And I mean, we're all being told how awful it is to try and give the police any work to do because there aren't enough of them. Well, they found 6,000 of them to go to Carbis Bay in Cornwall.
Mind you, they did get seriously punished for that barbecue on the beach. They were regaled by a concert of sea shanties. A cruel and unusual punishment.
Yes, absolutely right. But I just think, you know, if we are to move into a new era, which some people want us to do, I think we have to give up on these ridiculous conferences, don't we? What is the point of the G7?
Couldn't they have just zoomed in, like the rest of us?
Well, of course they could. Even if they didn't zoom in, I mean, it was clearly all it was a very expensive photo opportunity.
Carrie was having a good time. She loves it. Wasn't she?
I mean, she couldn't rent dresses quick enough. I don't know, you can ask her.
Does she hire all her clothes?
Apparently, I would assume that the reason she's doing it is because, one, she's trying to big up some designer friends of hers so that she can wear more dresses that they can then sell to other people. But I presume it must be some kind of sustainability
virtue signalling thing.
That you now rent your clothes.
Well, all political women in particular now are going to turn up in rented clothes. So they cannot be castigated for wearing a £6,000 dress.
What are they trying to do? Offset their carbon emissions by all of them flying?
It's the new way to signal your virtue.
There's an app, I think, that I've seen an advert for recently, which is all about reusing clothes. And so what happens when you get tired of the clothes you've got is you share them with other people. And so it's all sustainable and it's all sharing and it's all lovely. And I'm going, that's great. And just when you walk out the door, somebody stabs you because there's not enough police to police it. So never mind the night out anyway.
Sartorial virtue signal.
It really is. So the G7 for me, all of them, the whole kit and caboodle. So you're number three, Kevin.
My number three is our old friend Keir Starmer.
Oh, yes.
He's
doing well this time.
Yeah, I could say it's because he continues his extraordinary way of being Her Majesty's leader of the opposition by supporting Boris all the way. I mean, everything Boris ever does, the only opposition he gets is from his own MPs.
Yeah.
But Keir goes, righto, we're right behind you on that one.
You should have done that last week, though.
Just hopeless. But that isn't why I'm going to pinpoint Keir this week. It's for his extraordinary declaration that it's time that Colin Pitchfork, the double rapist murderer of schoolgirls, who's been in jail for 33 years, should now be released in tune, showing what the great empathy that Keir has with the people of this country. This guy murdered and raped two 15-year-old schoolgirls in the woods.
3 years apart, by the way, so it wasn't as if it was a one-off kind of
act. And he had his young
madness.
Child on the front seat of the car, apparently, while he was doing this.
Well, exactly. Oh. So there are some people, Keir, he says, it's got to be released sometimes. I say, no.
This is him speaking in his capacity as former Director of Public Prosecutions. There's no wonder the legal system in this country is absolutely screwed.
I wonder whether he's lining himself up to later criticise the policing, this new sentencing and policing bill.
Yeah.
Because one of the proposals in that draft bill is that for people who murder children or commit multiple murders, they'll have a real life sentence rather than just, you know, 30 years.
I mean, one of the complications, I guess, of this case is because he was sentenced when he was sentenced, he apparently couldn't be sentenced in the way that he would be now. So if it was now, he wouldn't be let out. But, you know, they can make a change to that when they feel like it. Because you remember John Warboys?
Yeah.
You know, it's the same situation. He was about to be released on parole until there was a judicial review. So they could easily do the same here.
It wasn't that. The parole board decided to release John Warboys, and there was a massive public storm. You can't let this guy out. And we, the public, were informed by the parole board. They literally said this. I'm afraid this is our decision, and you have no right to know the reasons we reached this decision.
Amazing.
And there was a massive storm, and they had to change the law that parole board decisions could now be challenged, and they had to tell us why they'd made decisions. So they've decided he should be released. There will be a massive storm. There already is a massive storm. I predict he won't be. What Keir Starmer and all his legal mates have got to realise is there are some people, lock them up and throw the key away. Don't
exactly
let this guy out.
But this is almost like Sir Keir Starmer is on this relentless kind of quest to make himself even more unpopular every single week. Every single week he loses about 2 points, right? He'll lose another 2 points next week until he just gets so far away from
extraordinary
from
lack of empathy with the people. Extraordinary lack of understanding
and
what people
He used to head up the CPS as well, the Crown Prosecution Service.
I think this is
so
how
it just goes to show how unbelievably out of touch people in the legal profession are.
This is what I'm saying. This is how we get
people.
These problems. Because, you know, you can imagine if they were to start saying that we should be releasing people like Huntley, you know, because he served his time. And there are people, I mean, I used to talk to them all the time. I've more or less given up talking to people like the Howard Lee for penal reform, because all they talk about is letting people out of prison.
But it's strange.
They have no
it?
Care about the victims.
It's strange that they talk about him having been, you know, on these courses and that he is ready for release. But it's not about him. It's about justice. It's about the girls who were murdered, not about whether he's ready to come out or not.
Well, their families are still alive. You know, it's an outrage.
Yeah. And their families have already spoken out and said how terrible this is going to be for them. Because it's going to bring it all back. And
30
he's
years
be
is really
around.
Not a great deal of time for
33 years
is to
just stay there. And Keir Starmer, as a politician, as a leading politician, should understand, you know, if that's what he really thinks, this guy should be let out, just keep quiet about it, Keir, because it's
also
not going to do
you
any
good.
You
know, we can't rehearse all of the arguments obviously here, but you know, in the end, of what benefit is releasing this guy apart from to him? He's the only one that's benefiting. Nobody else is.
Exactly.
He's still capable of committing those crimes again.
Yeah.
He's not, as far as I'm concerned, safe, because I don't believe
what he is. He's 61 years old. That means sexually active.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
This guy will be a clear and present danger.
Definitely.
And it's no wonder, backing the release of the likes of Colin Pitchfork, that Keir Starmer is now officially, in terms of the polls, less successful and less supported as Labour leader than Jeremy Corbyn. He's worse,
it's amazing,
officially
it's quite
worse than Corbyn.
Though,
what
so
are they doing with that?
Him.
Get rid of him.
Yeah.
Get rid
Angela
of him.
Angela Rayner, of course, is not much better. I mean, she, popping up on your earlier Gareth Southgate argument, she also issued a statement, didn't she, saying that all people who boo the players of taking the knee are racist. Yeah. I mean, that was it. Yeah. There was no room
it's
for any sort
true,
of nuance, no room for
the
any
party
argument.
Of the people.
It's definitely the party of the people. You're kind of going, that'll be why people don't vote
these
for
are
you.
These are your voters, Keir and Angela, that you're calling racists. These are Labour voters, potentially, on the terraces, that you say you're racist if you booed footballers grovelling to Black Lives Matter. No, they're not.
You just
they're
know
not.
That if the players linked arms in opposition to discrimination, then the players would not boo.
There would not
because
be
it's
any booing.
Not associated
they
with
wouldn't
Black Lives Matter.
It would be absolutely fine, because that's what Millwall did, and that's what happened. They didn't boo.
These idiots, Starmer, Rayner and the likes thereof, they cannot divorce themselves from their addiction to identity politics. Identity politics means nothing to those guys on the terraces. It means nothing to the people in the Red Wall states constituencies, and yet on they go. Don't boo. You know, identity,
be kind.
Culture wars.
Be kind.
The trans.
Be kind.
Yeah, it's just useless.
I know.
Useless.
So, Emma, your third one?
My third is Comedy Central.
Oh, yes.
I imagine that this is probably not as well known as the other planks this week.
No, this is definitely coming from slightly left field, I would say. So what you might call a minority channel.
Good thing
channel.
Too. Good thing too.
Yeah.
So there is a lady called Thania Moore, who is apparently a comedian. I've never heard of her. She did this quiz on Comedy Central, this sort of skit about Dominic Cummings and Boris Johnson, and how Dominic Cummings had made this statement saying that it was absolutely crackers that Boris Johnson and Dominic Cummings were in the positions that they were in during the pandemic. She then went on to say that she thought that it were that him using the phrase, she said something along the lines of a cracker, using the term crackers drives her
to talk
crackers,
about another cracker.
Like
yeah,
that.
Cracker, of course, is the word they use really in America more than here, isn't it?
For white
people in the South.
Yeah.
So it was
a racist term. It would definitely be a racist term in America. Yeah.
It was a very, very strange little skit. And then she went on to do this quiz that was entitled, How White Man Are You, Man?
How hilarious.
I thought I would test you some of the questions that she
asked. Comedy Central channel goes out on sort of it's not a preview, is it?
Yeah, it's got its own channel.
I've seen Comedy Central in America.
There.
I haven't seen it here.
No, it's there.
It was a very, very, very strange skit. And they had these women at the end blowing sort of, you know, the sort of party horn things and trying to do party poppers and looking like they were all sort of stupid. It was a very, very strange,
very weird. I mean, imagine if you proposed doing that, except not about white people.
It just wasn't comedy.
No.
But it was just, I mean, she was saying that that Dominic Cummings, because of what he'd said, it was the most she'd ever been attracted to a white man. Very, very odd. Anyway, so she, in How White Man Are You, Man?
Yes.
She asked, amongst the questions were, do you walk into a room and feel like you belong in that room and should be leading that room?
Yes.
Sure, yeah, absolutely, 100%.
All the time.
Do you look at a picture of Jesus and instantly recognise similarities between the two of you?
No, not in that case. What about you, Kevin?
Yeah, I do, yeah.
Yeah.
All the time.
Very much.
Yes.
The
glasses.
This is definitely one for the two of you. Are you likely to throw up if you hear the words woke, identity politics, political correctness, diversity and equality?
Yes.
No, it doesn't make me sick. Yes. It just annoys me.
No. I could easily throw up. If I got all those words at once, I definitely would puke.
Do you find that hoodies are threatening, intimidating and potentially a weapon of mass destruction?
No, I find them boring.
Yeah, boring and very hot as well.
Do you have a problem with Russians that you can't really explain?
No.
No, I don't, funnily enough. No. Why Russians?
Where's that Trump, coming from? It's Trump, isn't it?
Oh, okay. Oh, so you're meant to be some kind of Trump-supporting white man.
Yeah. It's a jibe at Trump.
It's a bit of a generalisation, this issue.
You should tell Thania that Donald Trump isn't the president anymore. Maybe she'll get on board at some point.
Yeah, maybe.
And do you think that Eminem is the greatest rapper of all time?
He's pretty good, but I wouldn't say so. But I don't really have a view.
Obviously, Kanye is the greatest rapper of all time.
I don't really agree. I think Eminem is best.
But I mean,
you're
this
very
is the other
white
thing. But this is the other thing, right? That I mentioned.
Well, I think Tiger Woods.
When we were talking,
Tiger Woods is a
really
when
good we were talking about the G7 earlier on, you know, David Attenborough goes to to preach to them about how the world is coming to an end, and he and Joe Biden together, collectively, almost 200 years old. But those are the two old white men who are apparently okay. It's all right to like them, but of course, if you're any kind of other old white man like Donald Trump, that's not allowed.
So the suggestion, by the way, in this was that what is wrong with our politics? Yeah. The problem is white men. So it was another one of these kind of like MASH Report Nish Kumar style comedy sketches, which is just about
I
sort of political
posturing.
Remember
when he used to have a job? There's no one anymore, does he?
Do you know the G7? Just one random point. What do they call it, the G7, when there was loads of other world leaders there as well? The South African leader turned up, the guy from South Korea.
It's a bit like the Eurovision Song Contest.
You know. Name it, they were there.
Yeah, but it's
Ursula
like the Eurovision.
Von der Leyen.
You know,
yeah. European
well, Israel
Union,
was in the
country.
Eurovision Song Contest. Australia in it as well.
Australia got kicked out this year.
Oh, did they? Yeah. So, but you can have anyone you want, I think. That's the point. You know, the European Union isn't even a country.
Yeah, but Eurovision, you'd allow a kind of relaxation of the rules without really bothering to care very much. But
you're allowed to invite
your
mates.
Why call it the
G7
if you're the host,
you're allowed to. I think the reasoning they had was that they wanted to invite countries that they wanted to do some trade deals with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So presumably, you know, that's why they did it. But we haven't had a South African trade deal announced. So we've just had an Australian one. Although they haven't really announced it. They've done this thing where they've gone, oh, yeah, we've got a trade deal. What's in it? We haven't done that yet.
Yeah,
We haven't done that yet. We've just basically had dinner and said, you fancy doing a trade deal? Yes, okay. Well, great. That's it then. We've got a trade deal.
Yeah, they hammered it out over dinner.
Over the turbot, right? Presumably.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to go back for mine to the BBC. Not for all of the reasons we've already mentioned them. Not because of Lord Hall, not because of Martin Bashir, not because of their uselessness in all sorts of other ways, but because of the football and their coverage of the Euros. Christian Eriksen, I wasn't actually watching at the time. We were sitting in the garden, but my son came downstairs and said, have you seen what's happened to Christian Eriksen? I was like, no. So he went inside and it was like, oh my God. You know, and obviously he had this cardiac arrest.
Thought he was dead, didn't he, at that point?
And he was on the pitch and, you know, the cameras were on him. And later, the BBC had to issue an apology because what they didn't do, which many other countries who were covering the same game did do, was they pulled the camera off, not only showing a close-up of Christian Eriksen, who was clearly in some difficulty, possibly unconscious, possibly dead, for all you knew.
With CPR
having CPR, committed on him. And then cutting to his wife,
that
inexplicably,
was awful.
Who was naturally very distraught and in tears, and leaving the camera to linger. Now, you know, it's all very well for them to say, oh, we were taking the UEFA feed, so there wasn't anything we could do. Absolute rubbish. Of course there was something they could do. They could have cut
the
feed
plug.
And gone back to the studio. It's not as if they didn't have anybody else to talk to.
Which is what the other countries did.
Yeah,
in
but they've
their
also
coverage.
Got some very highly paid people, including Gary Lineker and Alan Shearer, and I guess Rio Ferdinand was there, I think, wasn't he?
Yeah.
And you just kind of go, well, why wouldn't you actually just immediately look at that and say, look, we better leave this because, you know...
Somebody made a very bad decision.
My belief is that they're frightened of telling Gary Lineker what to do because he's now so powerful that nobody probably gives him any kind of, any kind of... Nobody goes near him just in case he gets annoyed with them. You know, and that's the sense
it's strange, isn't it? It's part of our sort of, people filming incidents on their phones.
Yes.
It's a sort of like sinister spectator culture where you want to see the wife crying, and they're so desensitized to it.
Yeah.
They don't think, oh, this is something that we shouldn't be.
Yeah.
We shouldn't.
I mean,
be filming.
I'm not one of those who said, because there were some sort of crazies on the left who wanted people fired, wanted the cameraman fired for filming. You know, if you're at a live event
over
and you're a journalist, you know, I don't blame the people for filming it, but you've got an editing process which is supposed to, you know, override that so that you've got the footage if you wish to have it. But normal common sense and taste and decency would say you're not actually going to run that live. You really just shouldn't be doing it.
And that was the weirdest thing, because there was still the commentary team there, and by then I think Gary and the gang were also adding their thoughts, not in shots, but they were talking about it. And they were sort of saying, oh, well, there's a terrible atmosphere now. And I was watching it, and I said, that guy's getting CPR.
Yeah.
You could see him,
you
know, and you thought, what, my God, if they're not careful, millions of people are going to witness a man die live on TV.
Yeah.
The one slack I'd cut the BBC to some extent is somebody in charge thought, this is an astonishing unfolding drama. And in the heat of the moment, they made the decision to stick with it.
Mm.
It was a wrong decision. When it cut back to Gary Lineker and the gang, they were completely overwhelmed, completely unable to deal with it.
Right.
So much so that within 5 minutes, they just went, well, that's the end of the game, we're off.
Yeah.
And it ended. And then they had to go back. You know when they resumed the game?
They panicked.
When they resumed the game, the commentary team has obviously gone to the bar or something. And the commentary was a couple of technical guys.
Oh, was it?
They go, you better start doing it. So they go, well, the Danish guy's got the ball now, and I think it's gone on to Finland.
This is where I find it's sort of rather invidious, because you've got the BBC paying these people a fortune to be journalists, effectively, to be presenters.
Mm-hmm.
But then when they are presented with something which they find a bit uncomfortable, they're not journalists anymore. They're people who can't do it. And they go, oh, my God, we can't talk about this. This is too
But it goes
difficult.
Back to the point about Bashir, which is the BBC have obviously lost a sense of ethical perspective. The things that they choose to cover and choose, or more importantly, choose not to cover, or in this case, not instantly realising that it was totally tasteless to continue filming that and then to go and start filming his distraught wife being comforted by their team captain. You know, you would think that instinctively, as any viewer would instinctively think, is, oh my God, you should not be filming this.
Yes, absolutely right. And again, their excuse and their apology was not quite the full ticket, because they claimed that they were just taking the feed as if that's an excuse.
It's not. Because all the other countries cut it off.
Yeah.
And Ian Wright,
who works for ITV on this one.
Yeah, he tweeted, cut to studio FFS! Exclamation mark.
You can still choose to, if you're using someone else's feed, you can still choose to stop using it.
Yes, exactly.
This is what everybody else did.
Yeah.
It's a central pool.
That's not the point.
You know,
decisions were not made that should have been made.
And I think
I said this actually the weekend, that if they haven't got some kind of protocol for this kind of thing, they need to get one.
Yeah.
Because
if
you've got a director or a producer who doesn't know how to make that decision, you should give them a piece of paper that says, if this happens, you do that. And if they haven't got that, I'd be astonished.
As I said earlier, the other decision that they'd obviously made prior to the occasion was, we will not mention the fans booing, taking the knee, which is outrageous news censorship by our increasingly dictatorial state broadcaster
that
has its own moral matrix. They've invented their own moral system. They will, in the end, you know, what will probably happen about this feed that they kept running erroneously, you know, deputy heads will roll, but they'll come up with some sort of moral reason why it was okay. They sort of beatify themselves. They see themselves as always saintly and always in the right, no matter what.
They're also always taking someone else's lead. So in that instance, they were taking Gareth Southgate's lead because he said that the players would just continue to take the knee and ignore the crowds and just keep going with it. So they obviously thought, well, you know,
we'll
the captain has said that,
you
so we'll just let them do it and we'll ignore if the fans boo.
That's news. That's journalism. You can't do that.
Now, we haven't yet carried over from last week because obviously we do one. We've got nine now, which we'll whittle down to three in a minute. I think I'm going to have to do Prince Harry again because as much as we try not to keep Meghan and Harry in every single week, today's story. I mean,
what's he done now?
Well, last week
the Duke and Duchess of PR disaster.
Last week he was in because he said he was going on 5 months paternity leave, right? Parental leave, as
five
he calls
months?
It. 5 months parental
for
leave.
What?
Except on the first
lecturing
day.
Us.
Except on the first day of his parental leave. He basically decided to complain to the BBC about the fact that they were now going to be sued by him and Megs on the grounds that they'd done a story that wasn't true, which now turns out to be slightly not necessarily the case. Mm. This week, he's apparently, he and Megs have been trying to get a meeting with the woman who's the agent for the Pussycat Dolls, right, because they did very well for what's her name, Nicole Scherzinger, to get a yogurt commercial and various other commercial deals. Got her onto Strictly or got her onto... So they're now looking for more sponsorship opportunities because they haven't made enough money yet from Spotify and Netflix. And so apparently
no
they think that...
No class whatsoever.
Can you imagine if they start doing adverts?
Not bad though, is it?
You can imagine Meghan doing one of those yogurt commercials.
Have you seen,
sort of like
have you ever seen the burger video that she did?
No.
Have you not seen that? This you've got to see. I'll have to show it to you. Something she did for a men's magazine some years back. You know, it was like something like it wasn't GQ, but it was something a bit tackier than GQ. And she's literally wearing hot pants and hardly a very skimpy top. And she's very suggestively
like she used to doing
flipping
deal or
burgers
no deal.
And doing all this kind of, you know, stuff. And you're just kind of going, oh, God.
She was a hostess on the American Deal or No Deal.
Oh, yeah.
Similar outfits.
I mean, you know, we're not talking about sort of Meryl Streep here
in terms of
her acting
book,
career.
Her children's book, The Bench.
Yes.
Apparently, there's a suggestion she got a £500,000 advance for that. It's 186 words.
Oh, apparently someone said 39
lines.
Brilliant.
Apparently, you could write all of the words she uses in the book.
Listen,
the vocabulary is so limited into your hands.
You can't have anything but admiration for her commercial activity.
Yeah, half a million quid for 186 words. 186 words is about three paragraphs.
Well, apparently, as well, it reads as
if
it's
written
for...
I'd be literally on a boat off the coast of Monaco,
broadcasting
from Monte Carlo. Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, she's very good at that.
Queen Grifter. I just think
there are certain things that old Hazza should learn to stay away from.
And actually, another reason that's good to carry him over this week is because of the whole PR disaster surrounding the name Lilibet.
Yes.
That they complained to the BBC, because the BBC source that was a palace source said that they hadn't asked the Queen for permission, they'd simply informed her.
Yeah.
They then complained, threatening legal action, that they had defamed them by reporting from this palace source.
Mm-hmm.
And the palace, aka the Queen, has actually not come out saying, no, my grandson is right.
Yes. So if
it is the case, which I'm not sure if I think it is, that Lilibet was intended to be an olive branch, it is the worst, most, pardon the sort of mixing of metaphors, backfiring olive branch that
it
they
is,
could
no
have possibly
question.
Extended.
And I don't think it was anyway. I mean, I really don't. I mean, you don't call somebody after your, you know, the Queen of the UK's nickname. I mean, it's a very private.
She's
sort of,
eighth in line for the throne as well. It's a bit presumptuous,
her, they could have called her Lily. They could have called her Elizabeth.
Mm-hmm.
But Lilibet is very personal to me.
Also, they say it is a clear libel. And it's...
Which it isn't.
It's arguable. You know, is it defamatory to say that when naming a child after her great-grandmother, you didn't contact the grandmother first to ask her if she could name it after her nickname. Mm-hmm. Is that defamatory?
Well,
if there are conflicting sources, it is the duty of the press to report, but they're saying that you imply we're liars.
Well, that's, I suppose, what they would say, and I suppose they would also that say that you'd have to also show that there was some kind of reputational damage, which I'm
If they can establish that the BBC was lying.
But they haven't asked for... No, they haven't suggested that. They've suggested that the palace didn't know.
No, they did suggest that their letter to the BBC said, you've called us liars, and that is clearly defamatory.
Well, no, they've inferred that. But what I'm saying is that they haven't said the BBC was lying. They've said the BBC spoke to someone who didn't know that they'd spoken to the Queen. That's what they're
doing. But if they hadn't have sent the letter, no one would have noticed that there was a conflict there anyway.
They actually say that it's clearly defamatory to suggest that...
Yes, I know that. Yeah. But what I'm saying is they're not...
They're railing back on it, because the argument now revolves around that there's a difference between asking the Queen
and telling
if we can name the kid after your childhood nickname, or just telling.
Or just doing it, yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
right.
That just doing it, yeah.
Okay, right, so we've got 9. We need to get them down to 3. So why don't you pick your favourite one of Kevin's? Kevin, what are your 3?
My 3 were Gareth Southgate.
Yes.
It was Keir Starmer for his Colin Pitchfork support, and Tony Hall, the Director General of the BBC.
They're all pretty good.
That's actually quite hard, isn't it?
It's funny when you get to this point when you realise, actually, this is quite tough competition. And this, you know, in recent times, it's really been quite close, quite a close call.
It's a toss-up between Keir Starmer and Gareth Southgate.
You don't like Tony Hall? I mean, I don't like Tony Hall.
I think maybe Keir Starmer.
Yeah. Keir Starmer. Okay. Well, you know, he's raced up. He's raced up
I don't
the charts.
That would be my least favourite of my three.
He has raced up the charts lately. Okay. So, do you want to choose mine?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. So, my 3 were, of course, the BBC, the G7, and Chris Whitty.
Because Tony Hall got away with it in my selection, and also because I think it's a very good choice by you, I'm going to go for the BBC, and we can incorporate everything about
that sort of captures it all, doesn't it? So that sort of gives you Lord Hall as well.
Yeah.
Right, so you now need to pick... No, I need to pick yours, don't I?
Boris Johnson.
Yes.
Susan, Mitchie, Mickey, Stalin's Nanny, or Comedy Central?
I sort of want it to be Boris, really. Kind of has to be Boris, doesn't it? I think this might be the first time Boris and Keir Starmer have been in the top 3. But I think it has to be Boris, because he's taken our freedoms away. He's had sort of dangled them in front of us and then taken them away again. Plus all that other nonsense about feminine gender neutrality. I think it's got to be Boris. So we've got Boris Johnson, Sir Keir Starmer, and the BBC. Very traditional planks this week. So who's it going to be for the number one?
You know, I mean, I think given, for me, not my decision, of course, but for me, given the week we're going through and given what Boris has done, what with not only building back neutral and building back feminine, but also taking our freedoms away for another... It's got to be Boris, hasn't it, really?
I think Boris as well.
Unanimous.
I think he's the unanimous winner, isn't he?
Yeah, yeah.
And we'll give... I guess we'll give the BBC number 2, shall we, just to split them up?
Yeah.
Starmer number 3.
Yep, sure.
I think that
fits.
Good.
That's opposite sides of the playground.
So congratulations. Boris Johnson, the Prime Minister, you've managed to make a complete and utter dog's breakfast, for want of a better phrase, of the economy, of the reopening, and of the now treatment of the virus, which has almost disappeared. Boris Johnson, Plank of the Week, well done. We'll see you next time.